Podcast, a weekly tour of sports and pop culture. It's episode 10. It's our first 10th anniversary, our first 10th anniversary, if that makes any sense to you. And we're coming to you from the dining room for one of the last times here on the Bobcast, because in just 12 days, we're relocating to Syracuse. The countdown just keeps getting closer and closer, and we only have one episode left here in Peabody, Mass. Welcome to the Bobcast. It's August 12th, 2016. We have another wonderful guest for you today. We have another great line of stories from the world of sports, entertainment, pop culture, anything you choose, anything you want, we have it here on the Bobcast. And we'll bring it to you Friday at 6 p.m., as always. And we're brought to you by CLNS Radio. Our good friends at CLNS Radio continue to back our show. And CLNS Radio, never heard of it? New to our show, new to them. They're the leading online provider of audio and video coverage of your favorite Boston sports teams, whether it's the Bruins, whether it's the Patriots, the Red Sox, or their specialty, the Celtics. They have a full line of coverage over there. You need to check them out. Whether you're on Twitter, you can find them at CLNS Radio. You can find them on Facebook, facebook.com/CLNSFans. And they have a free mobile podcast app for your iOS phone or Android. Simply search CLNS Radio, and all your podcasts are there. Celtics Beat, The Bobcast, anything you want, anything you can think of. Beats and Eats, so many different varieties of shows for any kind of sports and entertainment fan over there. And just as they have everything, we have a little bit of everything for you, too. I'm your host, Bobby Manning. You can find me at Real Bob Manning. You can find our lovely show page at The Bobcast Show. And we have a Facebook account, too. Just log on to Facebook, go up to that search bar at the top, type in at The Bobcast Show, and that'll take you right to our page. We have a full line of fantastic guests, 9 weeks of great personalities coming on our show, from entertainers like Mel Smith to personalities in the media world, whether it's Chad Finn, Adam Kaufman, even athletes. We had a standout high school football player on the show in our 6th episode. You can find all of our previous shows on bobcastpod.libsyn.com. Last week, we had Chris Sizzler on. We got a nice football primer going. Preseason games started yesterday in the NFL, so if you want to find our top 5 storylines going into this football season, you can get that on our show page or our iTunes page, clnsradio.com/bobcastitunes. Enough promo. Let's jump right into the show. Syracuse countdown, like I said, just keeps getting closer and closer. I don't even know what to expect there. There's just going to be so many opportunities, so many new people, and it's crazy how fast the summer's gone by. We've done a lot of fun things on this show over the summer. I've done a lot of fun things, I know, in my own life, including a big game that you're finally going to be able to see firsthand later today when this show drops. Besides that, summer forecasts keep going on ESPN. We're taking a look at the Celtics season ahead with Chris Forsberg, ESPNBoston.com. You can find mine and many other Celtics forecasts. Today, the topic at hand was what you're most excited for this season. I'm talking about gunning for LeBron James for another year. The rivalry continues with them, and if the Celtics are good enough, it could finally become a legitimate rivalry again, in my eyes anyway. Plus, going to be writing my first column for Bosox Injection this week over at the Fansided Network. There are so many problems with this Red Sox team. I don't even want to begin it right now because we want to get to our guests. That first column is going to be some pure heat. And whether or not John Farrell is still coaching that team, it's going to either be an optimistic tone or a pessimistic tone. So my first Bosox Injection column, which is going to be a weekly column called The Sock Draw, is coming to you Wednesday on BosoxInjection.com. Besides that, the world of sports is not very much going on as you'd expect in August. I mean, these dumb events in the Olympics just remind me of how excited I get every year to see them and how big of a letdown they are. I turned on the TV the other day. There's two dudes in a canoe rowing up this huge stream Whitewater Rapids or something like that, and they're in a canoe just trying to steer between these gates. I'm like, what is this? This morning I turn on the Olympics. There's some dude with the most game face I've ever seen. The best part of it was the face he was making. It was just a complete stare down back and forth between these two guys shooting arrows right down the middle. So I shut that riot off right away. And then you got this video going around the internet of these two guys from the Philippines doing the diving competition. And they're not even diving. They're just doing backflops onto the water. It's the most painful thing you'll ever see. From the upper deck, they just went right down and landed on their backs. And that was it. 4 years of training for that. So there's your Olympics update. I have a little Olympics rant coming later, too. As for the USA basketball team, I woke up the other afternoon. All of a sudden, everyone on the TV is going crazy. Complaints about what's going on. So much ruckus. I'm like, did this team lose? All of a sudden, I look at the final score. They won by 10. So that tells you the story of Olympic basketball. A 10-point win is pretty much treated as a loss. And Andrew Bogut, they versed that Australia team. Andrew Bogut still got it, I'll tell you. The Warriors dumped him off, and they got one of the best players in the NBA in Kevin Durant, but the Mavericks are really picking up a fantastic player for free, I'll tell you that. Just a couple weeks ago was my one-on-one with one of the best media personalities in basketball. That's Jay King, and he is our guest on the program today. But before we bring him in, we want to do a nice plug for one of the good friends of the Bobcast, Loot Crate. And Loot Crate, what is it? You don't know anything about it. They have 580,000 followers on Twitter, and that just shows how big this brand has gotten. 650,000 people every month get their Loot Crates. It's a fans-focused subscription service of awesome gear, epic experiences. Their subscribers just get the best in pop culture. Marvel, Dragon Ball Z, Warcraft, all kinds of great items come in your Loot Crate every week. And all you got to do is just subscribe. It's a monthly subscription box service. You're going to get a box, a care package, if you will, of cool gear every month, original gear. Going to be worth a lot of money down the line if you get the right stuff. So for less than $20 a month, you get 6 to 8 items that include licensed gear, apparel, collectibles, just unique one-of-a-kind items you can't find anywhere else. And you have until August 19th, which is just 1 week away at 9 p.m. Pacific. That's 12 a.m. Eastern time. So pretty much the 20th of August you have to subscribe and receive this month's crate, and when that cutoff ends, it's over. I've seen these items, they're fantastic, and if you miss out on one of the best ones they have, you're going to regret it. But we have a special deal for you, courtesy of CLNS Radio. If you head to lootcrate.com/CLNS and enter this code CLNS, you're going to save $3 on any new subscription you get over at Loot Crate. They've been backing our guests for 10 straight weeks. And now we're going to bring in our 10th guest of the Bobcast. I'm going to give him the good old Bobcast introduction before we bring him in, and then we're going to get on the road. His name is Jay King. He covers the Celtics for MassLive.com, and I'll tell you, he is one of the faces of Celtics basketball coverage. He's a former basketball superstar for Skidmore College. I know he's going to disagree with that assessment. Pickup basketball superstar might be more like it. As you saw last month and the video that's going to be coming out tonight, he's tried out for the Maine Red Claws unsuccessfully, but over on the writer side of things, as he says himself, he writes with the passion of Kevin Garnett and the brilliance of Paul Pierce. He started covering the Celtics back in 2013 as the Big Three broke up, and it looked like it was going to be a downtrodden path for media members back then, but instead they've had one of the best stories in the NBA, and he's been at the forefront of it. He's watching the Brad Stevens era blossom right in front of our eyes, and he was headed towards a business career until he started his own Celtics blog as a side project, and that eventually led to his own career in media. He's one of the idols. If you want to cover the Celtics one day, you got to check out how this guy does it. And now he's joining our weekly tour. Jay King, welcome aboard the tour, my man.
Thanks a lot. That introduction was far too kind to about a lot of things, especially my basketball playing career. I was no superstar. Did I really write that about myself, the Paul Pierce thing?
That's so.
That's
so like, I went on a long time ago this morning.
If I ever wrote that.
I always do a little research on the people coming on the show so I can give them the Bobcast special introduction, and that was written on your bio on Mass Live, so you might want to check in on that if you don't believe
it. Yeah, I'm embarrassed. I'm embarrassed by that line, man. I got to go change that somehow.
you're gonna love it when you see it. So, Celtics Town, I want to talk to you about that a little bit. How did a side project in college turn into a full-blown career covering the Celtics? Because I heard you talk about it on your Rain and Jays podcast. But take me a little deeper into that blog and how it turned into a career.
I think it was my senior year of college. I was in a class, and it was some computer class. It was some elective that I took because it was supposed to be really easy. It was with one of the easiest professors in school. I figured I'd get an A. That was the only reason I took it. And we had to start a blog. So I didn't know what to write about. I just decided, you know what, let's go with the Celtics. And it must have been the year after their championship.
Yeah, 2009.
Or maybe 2 years after their championship. And they were still really good. And they were a fun team to write about. And I just kind of fell in love with writing. I'd never liked writing before. But once I did it about something I was passionate about, obviously basketball, then I just really grew to like it. And so after the class ended, I continued to host the blog. And it became CelticsTown.com. And I guess I did that for like 3 or 4 years, and that led to a freelance opportunity, which led to a few other opportunities. And then 3 years ago, I was lucky enough that I was in the right place at the right time, covering high school sports full-time for MassLive.com when they decided to put more resources into professional sports coverage. And they gave me the Celtics job, and I've been really lucky that my career has gone the way it has gone so far.
So 2013, you come into the fold in April. End of the Big Three era. They're finally starting to break apart. The team's going young. I remember that 2013-14 season. They must have had like 100 players on the roster. That's a little of an exaggeration, but there were just so many guys coming in and out of the fold. Did it just seem like a doomsday for the Celtics back then? And how big of a surprise was it that two moves, really, the Jay Crowder trade and the Isaiah Thomas trade, ended up propelling this team into one of the best in the NBA by this point?
It didn't seem like doomsday because by then they already had pulled the trigger on the Brooklyn Nets trade. So they had all those picks coming in the future. And, you know, they still had Rondo, but he was hurt for a while. And it was just a weird team, I would say. It wasn't like it doomsday at all because the future was still bright, and there was the feeling that Brad Stevens was a good coach, and they had some intriguing young players, whether it was Kelly Olynyk, Jared Sullinger. But, yeah, obviously, like, they needed to make some serious moves, and they have since. But, yeah, I wouldn't say it was doomsday. And then, yeah, the Rondo trade for Crowder and then later the Isaiah Thomas trade kind of transformed them from a team that was played hard all the time but kind of had a lot of mismatched pieces and a lot of guys that knew, like Chris Humphreys knew he wasn't going to stay there for long. Jared Bayless knew the same thing. Like, there were a lot of, like, just weird veterans who knew
Joel
they weren't going to be. Yeah, like, they knew they weren't going to be in Boston for a while, but they had to try to make the best of it. And I think it was really tough on Brad Stevens because even Rondo, Jeff Green, the guys who were the more established players on the team, they either knew they weren't going to be around or their future was really in flux that whole time. So it was probably tough to form a real team bond on that group just because all those guys knew that they weren't going to be there for a long time. And like guys like Gerald Wallace, when he first got there, he didn't want to be there. He kind of learned how to embrace the role of being the older guy on a rebuilding team. But, yeah, it was just a really weird feel. And then they started to make strides, and then the Isaiah Thomas trade and Jay Crowder trade just really pushed them forward to the point where they are now.
It's funny, that Brooklyn trade, it's crazy how we've rewritten that just because how fast that Brooklyn team that they had that was on the cover of Sports Illustrated, one of the favorites to win it all that year. It seemed like a risk back at the time, and a lot of people actually didn't like the trade back around here, but it just became one of the biggest swindle jobs in NBA history that fast. How do you think they've fared with those Brooklyn picks so far? Of course, James Young wasn't a big home run, but what are you thinking of their latest selection, Jaylen Brown, and what have you seen out of him so far?
I mean, he's got a lot to prove just because even his lone year at California, he wasn't great. Like, he's really athletic. He's really strong. He has a lot of really impressive tools, but he's never produced at a really high level. So he has a lot to prove, I think, but his talent is just tantalizing. And everybody talks highly of his competitiveness and his work ethic, which is huge for a guy with his skills. If you put a guy like that and he's willing, I believe Brad Stevens said this on the Chris Mannix show, that he thinks Jaylen Brown will work on the right things in his game, and that's important because right now he's like a blank canvas, and he could become, I don't know what he'll become. I don't know whether he'll just be like a really athletic defense guy, or will he be a guy who has a lot of offensive playmaking abilities. I'm not sure what he'll become, but it's really promising that he supposedly has that work ethic and that mentality that he really wants to get better. Because right now he's a 19-year-old with all the physical gifts you could want in a great player. And he's not a great player yet, but I do like his physical gifts and allegedly, you know, the way he approaches the game of basketball and how he approaches getting better at it.
They're definitely putting an emphasis on that Celtics personality that they've built over the last few years here. And you got to love the charisma of the team, that kind of thing, the personalities they've had in there. They've built a sort of new culture under Brad Stevens. So that schedule dropped yesterday, and the big focus of everyone is they finally have a Christmas Day game again. Are you going to be on the road for Christmas, and what do you think of that as a Celtics writer?
I will be on the road for Christmas. I'll be in New York, I assume. I mean, I haven't sat down with my boss yet and solidified all the travel plans, but I assume that one will be on the schedule. Yeah, I mean, it goes both ways. Obviously, I'd like to be with my family on Christmas, but it'll be cool to cover a team that is now seen as one of the best 8 or 10 in the league, 8 or 10 most interesting in the league, and they are. You know, they're probably second or third in the East as you look at it. At the next season, whether it's them or Toronto fighting, I think for second and third, the way you look at it right now, so it's really exciting, and it's been a fun ride to cover them from the beginning of that Brad Stevens era, like you said, where just they had so many things to figure out, and now they've kind of figured a lot of those things out, and they still have pieces to make a trade, they still have draft picks on the way, they still have salary cap space in the future. Like, this team is really good already and has a lot of ways to shape up the rest of that roster. And I think that's really exciting. It's an exciting team to cover because of all the possibilities that exist, I think, and the fact that this team could be really good for a long time.
They're fantastic on paper, and we'll see how it pans out rotation-wise eventually. And it really, that journey, like you said, from the start in 2013 really culminated in a fun summer. So many rumors, so many actual moves from the team themselves. As a guy covering the team, and besides facing off with me one-on-one, what ended up being the most exciting story, not so much with the Celtics, but in the NBA in general, in this just wild offseason?
I mean, obviously the Warriors, I would say, were the biggest story, and Kevin Durant going there, and just what that team will become. The possibilities are ridiculous for that team. They won 73 games last year and added a top three player in the league, a possible MVP. They have maybe the three best shooters in the entire NBA in Kevin Durant, Stephen Curry, and Klay Thompson. They have Draymond Green, who might be the most versatile defender in the NBA. And all of them are really good passers and really selfless players. So
their role players are ridiculous, too. Between Iguodala, they got Zaza for $1 million, David West for under the minimum. It's absurd the team they've assembled up there.
Yeah, and I love the Zaza signing. I think David West is a little on the, I mean, not just a little. He's a lot on the downside of his career, but he'll probably help, and especially at that price. Like, that's a no-brainer. So they're going to have a good team. And I do think they'll miss Bogut, and I do think they'll miss Barbosa. But come on, they got Kevin Durant. So I think that was that really drove the offseason conversation. And then all the other parts of that, like Russell Westbrook, was he going to sign an extension or get traded? And obviously he signed the extension. But and then, you know, the LeBron James thing where he just scaled this team that won 73 games. And he came back from 3-1. And, like, that was one of the greatest finals performances we've ever seen. And now he's going to have to top it next year because the Warriors are even better. So it's crazy. And then the whole, like, Duncan retiring, that was a huge deal. Kobe retiring, although we knew that was going to happen.
Still waiting on Pierce and Garnett.
Yeah, who knows? Hopefully those guys haven't played their last games. I'd like to see, you know, a couple more step-back jumpers from the truth and a few more wild strings of expletives from Garnett. Yeah.
If you remember last year, they sat him on the bench when he came through. The whole Garden was full waiting to see him, and all they got was a nice wave from the bench.
Yeah, but I honestly believe that might have been for the best. Like who wants to see Kevin Garnett playing 10 minutes of mediocre basketball, whereas he was sitting on the bench and everyone was hitting him with the "we want Garnett" chants.
Yep.
And he was able to soak it all in. And obviously, if he was playing, he wouldn't have been able to soak it all in. He is a guy, when he plays, he doesn't really take much time to appreciate the moment, I don't think. I think he's just wrapped up inside his own brain, like almost having like brain seizures because he's so into the game. So I think, honestly, like it sounds weird, but I think that was almost for the best because the crowd was able to embrace him. He was even able to enjoy the Gino. Yeah. How did I forget that? But he was even like the Celtics. That was one of the rare blowouts they had at home. And one of the few times they were able to show Gino, and Garnett was just like, he was able to enjoy that. And if he had been on the downside of a 25-point loss and it actually played, I don't think that happens. So that was a cool fun moment. It turned out to be awesome.
The second biggest signing of the offseason behind Kevin Durant, arguably, came from the Celtics and Al Horford. But it was a hectic few hours leading up to that decision, and it was even one that threw Woj, the super reporter, off a little bit. In the waning moments of that, he reported that the Celtics and Wizards had been closed off the books. He was probably going to be returning to the Hawks. Everything changed in a split instant, and all of a sudden he's in Boston. How close were the Celtics to not getting Al Horford in that moment?
I'm not sure that it ever got nearly as hectic as it sounded. It seems like either they didn't intend to sign Al Horford from the beginning, or it seemed they approached it like they couldn't possibly lose him, it felt like. You know, they went out and got Dwight Howard, which obviously could turn him off considering they still had him and Millsap. Yep. And then they tried to trade Millsap, who I assume grew close to Horford as teammates. So it was, and then they didn't offer him the full max from the beginning. So it was like a whole series of events that it seemed like they undervalued him they didn't show him the love. And from the start, it seemed like Atlanta was a great place for him and it would have been tough for him to leave. But then Boston showed up with a team that was pretty similar, both won 48 games last year, and is on the rise and has a lot of young pieces, whereas Atlanta, you know, you got Korver, who's kind of on the downside, and you've got Teague, who was shipped off, and Millsap, who's getting a little older, and he'll be a free agent in a year. So I think there was a lot more uncertainty involving Atlanta, and Boston just seemed like a good spot for him. And I know Washington put together, you know, a pretty impressive pitch, but once Atlanta kind of botched that, I think the Celtics were a pretty obvious fit for Horford.
What he said, too, that really stuck out to me was that dream team of players they brought along between Jay Crowder and Isaiah. And I don't know if Kelly Olynyk was there in the tie-dye shirt for that meeting. But
I think that's the first time Kelly Olynyk's ever been described as being part of a dream team.
I don't know if he was part of that arsenal that went to see Horford, but he said that really stuck out to him, and that made a big impact on him. So I think they're going to keep sending these players to go pitch to the free agents in the future. And it worked with him, almost worked with Durant, and it really led to a wild offseason. So now that it's coming to a close, all these bodies are coming in the camp again. I remember last year there was just so much uncertainty about what the actual final 15 or so players would be coming into the season. They're going to have close to 20 guys again coming in, it looks like. Do you think that's going to throw off the rotation a little bit? Because if you remember last year, they had a lot of trouble hammering down what the roster was actually going to look like right up to opening night, it almost seemed like. Is having all these guys going to make the preseason almost a little hectic?
I don't think so. I feel like there's a pretty clear-cut top 8 or 9, and then maybe it's the last one or two spots in the rotation that'll be tough. Like, obviously, Isaiah Thomas, Jay Crowder, Avery Bradley, Marcus Smart, Al Horford, Amir Johnson, Kelly Olynyk, probably Jonas Jerebko. So that's like 8 or 9 right there. The one spot I think will have a lot of competition is the backup 3, where I think you'll have Jaylen Brown competing. I think you'll have Gerald Green competing. I think you'll have James Young maybe fighting for a roster spot. You'll have RJ Hunter there.
No.
Yeah, and then, you know, guys like Terry Rozier, he's fighting for minutes, where some of Evan Turner's old minutes. I think Marcus Smart might get a few more of those. So really, as much as it seems like, I think last year was a bit different because they didn't know what direction they were going to take. They had so many big men. And if you remember, they started Tyler Zeller and David Lee on opening night. Like, amazing. David Lee ended up getting bought out. Tyler Zeller ended up completely getting DMPs for a chunk of
almost
the year.
The whole first half, yeah.
Yeah, so, they really weren't settled at all in their rotation. I think this year it's more obvious that, you know, that they'll definitely have Horford slide into the starting rotation. Maybe the power forward spot is the only spot that's kind of up for grabs right now. Yeah, I think it's a lot more settled this year, and it's pretty obvious, I think, that they want to have more shooting in the big man spots, and obviously Horford gives you that. Kelly Olynyk will give you that. Jonas Jerebko will give you that. So there are a lot of ways for them to play with those small skilled lineups that have really been good for them the last couple of years, and that Stevens likes to play because in his style of offense, the big men get a ton of ball handling responsibilities. They're used as passers, creators, and they get a lot of shot attempts. So from outside, so that's important to have as much shooting as possible. And I think this year they're a lot better suited to do that from day one.
That big men arsenal is definitely something to get excited about. I thought Amir Johnson was fantastic last year, whereas a lot of Celtics fans, I think, were ready to let him go on that unguaranteed contract. The consensus is they're going to be up near the top of the East like they were last year, health permitting. But is there any way this team can seriously touch Cleveland? And I don't mean overpass them, but maybe get into a series with them and take them the distance like we thought they might last year before they got swept. And who has to step up on the roster right now and play way above the level they've ever played before for that to end up happening?
The thing about it is, you know, Cleveland looked vulnerable last year in the regular season. At least for large portions of the regular season. And what we forgot is that LeBron James has another level that he gets to. And so once the playoffs hit, he stepped it up. And now those guys are champions. They know what it takes to win a title. They know what it takes to beat an absolutely elite, historic team in the Golden State Warriors. So I think they're going to be really, really tough to beat. I don't think the Celtics are on that level. I think to even get close, they would need a lot of things to go right, whether that's Jaylen Brown coming in and making an impact right away, Marcus Smart taking a leap, probably not to stardom, but closer to it, at least being able to shoulder some of the playmaking responsibilities. You know, Kelly Olynyk, he would have to come back from shoulder surgery and show few ill effects of that. Jay Crowder, you know, he improves a little bit. Isaiah Thomas keeps looking better. Horford fits right in. So I think a lot of things would have to go right for them to touch a healthy Cleveland team, because that team, I mean, Kyrie Irving, he has another year of experience. He was an absolute killer in the playoffs. And that team learned how to win. And I think Ty Lue really did a good job there. LeBron, we know now not to underestimate him, no matter what he does in the regular season. He's going to be great in the regular season, but he's not quite what he used to be in the regular season. When the playoffs come, he just lifts it right back up to as good as he ever was, and Cleveland's so good. So I don't think in my mind, I don't see a way for the Celtics to really get to Cleveland's level this year. But, you know, crazier things have happened, and teams have fallen off, and teams have taken the leap. So it's not completely out of the realm of possibility, I guess, but it's a real long shot.
On the trade front, a lot of people were so hungry for a trade for that reason exactly, that LeBron factor in Cleveland, whereas he's just such a dominant player, he can take the game over by himself just due to his star power alone. The Celtics were looking for someone not so much of a LeBron caliber, because there really isn't a guy out there like that, but someone of a frontline caliber, whether it was Russell Westbrook, who seems off the board now with his extension. Blake Griffin, I think you're really going to start to see the waves of him in OKC now that Westbrook's locked up there. I wouldn't throw him completely out yet, but he seems more off the table now. And Sacramento's shown no signs of wanting or even listening to attempts on Boogie Cousins. So where does that leave the Celtics on the trade market? Because you always hear them say they're interested in making a move, but you never really hear about who it's going to be. So but aside from those three guys, who's kind of a dark horse that could rise in the trade market this year for them?
Any star that shakes free. We've seen Danny Ainge. I mean, he's gone after Jimmy Butler. Any star that is in a situation where it might make sense for the team to part ways with that star, Danny Ainge is going to be in the discussion. And what we know by now is that he wants top talent. He wants that top five, top 10 guy who can push the Celtics to the next level, who can maybe challenge LeBron and the Cavs, who can maybe turn the Celtics into a title contender, or at least an Eastern Conference, a real, real Eastern Conference contender. But those guys come into play very often. You know, obviously they sat down with Kevin Durant. They were somewhat close. They were in the final six teams at least. The other thing we know is that Danny Ainge isn't going to strike a lopsided deal, a risky deal, just to get top talent. Or at least to get the level of guy that has been rumored, whether it's Jimmy Butler. He's an all-star. He's not like that transcendent guy. I think if Ainge strikes a deal and digs deep into that bag of assets, it is going to be for a home run trade, the type that will set up the Celtics for sustained success. And I do think there's a threshold he will reach where he starts to put more of those chips on the table. But first, they have to sign that next guy, and they have to take that next step. And that's the toughest step, is getting that top guy that can lift you from, you know, the level where you win 50 games to the level where you're a real force to be reckoned with. And they're looking for that. They want to develop that guy, whether it's one of their young players emerging improbably as a star, or finding it on the trade market, or, you know, finding it with cap space, because they'll have cap space again next summer. So the beauty of his rebuild is that he set himself up with plenty of avenues to chase these top guys. Now, the tough part is actually getting that guy. And obviously, you know, it's been years now that he's been looking for it, and Ainge has made a ton of good moves in a row, but he's still looking for that top guy that can push them to that next level.
Is there any chance? We've heard a lot about those Philadelphia guys, and the big man logjam there is not going away. They seem to have five guys who could be battling for minutes down the low post there with the 76ers. It seems to me like Danny Ainge is just kind of eyeing that, seeing if the situation comes where he can swoop in and get his bargain deal. And he's not really going to extend himself for any of those players. But do you think the potential of any of those guys, especially in a system with Brad Stevens, because I look at Nerlens Noel, defensive-minded center, athlete, can run the floor. He's so young. There's still so much potential for him to grow. Do you think the Celtics would take a look at a guy like that and hope that they can develop him into some even better rather than going for a home run and a guy everyone already knows is one of the best players in the league?
I mean, yeah, it's possible. The one thing I will say about Nerlens is, yeah, he's a really intriguing young talent. Yeah, he's a really talented defender. Yeah, he would be a real lift of athleticism in the front court. He is from Boston. The one thing I'll say about him, he only has 1 year left on his rookie deal. After this next year, he is going to get a big pay raise, and all of a sudden, he's not going to be that value guy on the rookie deal. He is going to be paid like a, one of the top centers, and he is going to have a monster deal because everybody who's worth a, anything is getting monster deals these days. And so he won't be as valuable, and maybe it might not make as much sense to spend valuable assets on him when he's going to get that, that big pay raise. And maybe it makes more sense to go after him in free agency next year, or maybe they just don't go after him at all. But obviously, he's the type of guy who would help you. He doesn't get you to that next level. And I do think that if Angel's going to give up serious assets, whether it's in the form of trade assets, draft picks, players, whatever, and future cap space, he hasn't gone after those like good players. They've had chances, you know, guys like Damari Carroll, guys like Danny Green were free agents last year. Celtics decided not to go after those guys because they wanted to keep that maximum cap space, which they used to get at Horford, which they used to get in the room with Kevin Durant. And they want to do that again next summer. So maybe, you know, if you go after those top guys and none of them say yes, and then Nerlens Noel, maybe. But again, Danny Ainge, he has absolutely prioritized cap flexibility above all else. Even their own free agents, like Tyler Zeller, he signed a one-year deal with a non-guaranteed second year. That's the only way he was coming back. If he wanted to sign a longer-term deal, Celtics weren't going to take him. Amir Johnson, Jonas Jerebko, they signed the same type deals where the Celtics aren't really making long-term commitments to these guys because they want to keep that flexibility open.
There's so many hurdles in the way of Noel, and it kills me because I think he would be the perfect kind of player to put down the middle. And they've talked about getting a stronger center to move Horford out to the wing on the four where he's played before and had success. But anyways, you caught up with Kelly Olynyk, and speaking of young big men on a value contract coming up, Kelly Olynyk's going to be handing the free agency next summer. You caught up with him and started to talk a little bit about his contract. What's been your assessment of his career so far? And is the team interested in talking extensions before 10/31? Probably not, you'd assume, with the cap flexibility thing.
Yeah, so I would say absolutely not on the contract extension. And that has nothing to do with how they view him as a player. And it has everything to do with, if they sign him to that contract extension, his next year's salary will be on the books rather than his lower cap hold. I would say absolutely not there, but only because of that reason, only because of salary purposes and the salary cap and the rules the way they are. As far as his career goes, he's an interesting guy to judge because obviously, he has those games where he looks so good, and he's just letting it fly, and he's hitting threes. He's looking for his shot, and he's really being a force. And then there are other games where he's a little bit more passive. He doesn't find as many opportunities.
The skill seems to be higher than the confidence is. Have you ever noticed a confidence issue with Olynyk?
Yeah, he's one of those guys. He doesn't seem to realize how good he is. And like when he pump fakes wide open threes, himself out of wide open threes. It is because he's their best shooter, and he should be letting it fly every single time he's open. And the coaches tell him to let it fly every single time he's open, and still he'll pump fake his way out of it. But I do think there's another level he can reach because it's so obvious the skill is there, and it's so obvious he can be a matchup, real matchup nightmare when he wants to be and when he really forces himself to be. And he needs to leave his impact on more games. But, I mean, still, he's a really helpful guy. When he's on the court, the offense is always so much better because he's a center who can shoot threes. And that's a huge asset to any team, and especially a team like the Celtics that hasn't had a lot of shooting for the last few years. So, and on top of that, he's a really good dude to have in the locker room. He's a really nice guy. He's been a starter. He's come off the bench. He's played big minutes. He's played small minutes. And you'll never hear Kelly Olynyk complain about any of that stuff. So he's a good guy to have around. I'm interested to see whether he does ever reach that next level because I think he can be an absolute nightly difference maker, but he has to get that mentality where he goes out there every night knowing I'm a bad dude. And until he gets that, I think he'll kind of hold himself back a little bit. But, you know, he's still a good player the way he is right now.
That hair's bad, but we definitely haven't seen Olynyk come out like a bad dude yet. Bobcast questions. We ask for your questions every week on the Bobcast. Get you involved on the show. And we have hard-hitting questions for you here, Jay. And let's run through them real quick so we can get you back to your vacation. Vinny asks, in a very pessimistic way, what's the worst-case scenario for this year's team? And, of course, injuries are the biggest thing that could go wrong. But outside injuries, what's something that could go wrong and take the Celtics team in the wrong direction in your eyes?
It's tough for me to find a real scenario where things go drastically wrong. I do think injuries could be more of an issue than they were last year. If you look at the games played last year, Avery Bradley was within one game of a career high for games played. Isaiah Thomas, I believe, played all 82 games for the first time in his career. Like, they had a lot of guys who were pretty healthy last year. They had tough injuries, obviously, in key moments with Avery Bradley going down with a hamstring and Jay Crowder with his ankle issue right near the end of the season, which hampered him against Atlanta. But they were pretty healthy last year. And
they did lose two players this summer in free agency, though, who did valuable things for them.
Yeah, no. So Evan Turner, you know, he was a valuable creator. I don't think he's, like, an irreplaceable guy by any means. And I think Terry Rozier showed enough in summer league where he'll probably take some of those minutes. I think Marcus Smart will continue to develop. And even if he doesn't get too much better, just by having his role change, I think he's better as a passer and maybe with the ball in his hands than he is as a finisher and shooter. So that might benefit him. And then you have Jaylen Brown, who will come in and play some of those minutes too. And even though he's obviously not a finished product by any means, he's super athletic and he's probably going to get to the line a fair amount. And he'll probably give you a highlight or two every night if he plays, you know, 10 to 15 minutes a game. So in my eyes, they really have a group that meshes well. You know, Isaiah Thomas is a great offensive player. All the other guys, Jay Crowder, Avery Bradley, Marcus Smart, Al Horford, Amir Johnson, those guys are great, great defenders. I don't see a scenario where they really flop. Maybe they're not the second or third best team in the East like we think they're going to be, like I think most people think they're going to be. But if they stay healthy, I don't think they'll be far from that. You know, they have a young team that just added Al Horford, who's like the easiest star to deal with.
Oh, he fills so many holes for them.
Yeah, and so it's tough for me to envision, as long as they stay pretty healthy, them not growing from 48 wins to something at least a little better in the coming season. But, you know, crazier things have happened. I just don't see it. This coming season, I think they'll win 50-plus games. And I think I predicted 53 or 54.
I'll have 55 right there. That's what I'm sticking with going into this year.
Yeah, and I think that because, they added Horford, and B, I think their roster just makes sense from day one. Like last year, they tried to go big for too long. Tyler Zeller, David Lee, those guys started, as I said earlier. And like they continued playing David Lee for half the year, and he didn't really help, and those traditional lineups didn't help. They'll have more skill. They'll have a better blueprint, I think, from day one, and I think that'll make a big difference. Halfway through the season last year, they were like 500. And so I don't think they'll suffer a rut like that this year because they'll their roster makes more sense. They don't have all the glut of big men, I think, that they had last year. I think Brad Stevens knows the way he wants to play from day one this year, and that should make a big difference.
Our buddy Mike over on the Green Banners podcast, and this is something you're going to have to explain. He's asking why you're sipping on the Star Wars haterade. What's your problem with Star Wars, Jay?
I don't have a problem with Star Wars. No problem with Star Wars.
Is it the new Star Wars that you have a problem with?
No. So I haven't watched Star Wars in like 20 years probably. And my co-host on my podcast, John Corrales, made a Star Wars reference in one of our most recent episodes. and I had no clue what he was talking about. So it's not that I sipped the haterade. It's just that
you've been out of the Star Wars mode too long.
Yeah, I'm out of the Star Wars game. I'm not well informed about Star Wars. So
I have not seen the new movie. Have you?
No.
We're gonna have to go see it before the summer ends, just to see what all the hype's about.
Yeah, so, or maybe not. You know, we don't have to.
We could. What we could do before this summer ends is get back together and renew our one-on-one battle. Everyone saw it on Twitter. It was the hype of the summer. It probably got more Twitter hype than the Al Horford signing. Maybe.
So yeah, definitely.
The video is dropping tonight. For anyone who listens to the Bobcast, they're finally going to have access through the show in the bonus content link to see the Bobby Manning versus Jay King video for the first time. One of my worst moments on a basketball court, I will say. My feet were not under me that day. I took some absolutely terrible shots. I'm not good at offense. That's what kills me in one-on-one. But we're going to rematch eventually. And my question for you, I threw my own question in this section today, is have you recovered from the game? Because you did not look too good after playing the 21.
Yeah, that was the first time I'd played outside in like 3 years, actually. So my knees are bad. I'm completely washed up. I'm all done. And I don't play outside as a rule because it just shatters my knees. I'm not what
the
I used to be.
The shot was still there. Was still there for sure.
The shot was still there. I'm excited to see the video because I think I'm going to look really bad. Even though I won, I think I'm going to look really bad in the video. I did talk a lot of crap though.
See all the crap I talked on the car right there. It's a whole documentary leading up to the game and then the showdown. It's a great video. I've been working on it. It's a little overdue, I will say, but at least it's finally here and we're gonna get a rematch going at some point. So that's our wrap for Jay King today. We're gonna let him get back to his vacation. How are you spending your vacation, Jay?
So I've done absolutely nothing with my vacation, actually. I have been in Boston at my apartment and just kind of hanging out. I've gone to the gym a little bit, tried to get back in shape a little bit, hit the beach for a few hours yesterday, and that's about it. Yeah, I'm just kind of trying to relax.
So that's Jay King. We'll see you again on the show eventually, man. You have your great podcast, Rain and Jays. We'll tell everyone to tune into that one. And once the podcast gets bigger, we'll definitely have you back during the season to talk some Celtics. One of the best out there. Jay King, thanks for joining the weekly tour.
Yeah, thanks for having me, man. That was a lot of fun.
That was Jay King. That was our Celtics conversation for this episode. And we're on to In the News. That's what I'm sticking with now as a name for our final section of the show. But first, our good friends over at Celtics Beat have a message for you. It's 95 degrees, so I'm going to go grab a water and listen to our good friend, Larry H. Russell.
Hi, this is Larry H. Russell with a message on behalf of the network. As the leading online provider of audio-video coverage of the Boston Celtics, CLNS Radio delivers fans the most provocative discussion and analysis from the most noted personalities in the Celtics realm of the World Wide Web. Home to the number one rated weekly podcast which covers the NBA's winningest franchise, Celtics Beat is released first thing every Sunday morning. We deliver the hottest of takes and get the lowdown on all things Celtics from players, league executives, and the biggest names in the national basketball media. And it doesn't end there. The original Celtics podcasters John Duke and Justin Poulin have returned. Available Mondays on clnsradio.com. Celtics Stuff Live is back and better than ever before with featured guests that are the most familiar voices to Celtics Nation. Basketball in Boston is heating up and you don't want to miss any of this. Download the CLNS Radio mobile app now. Available for your iPhone and Android.
Hey, we're back. Have you heard of SeatGeek? SeatGeek is one of the best apps on my phone, even as my storage just keeps going up and up from saving all these concert videos, these videos from sporting events, the dumb pictures I've been taking all summer. That storage on my phone really shoots up there, but the app I have to hold on to, the app I cannot delete under any circumstances, is SeatGeek, because it really is the best way to buy tickets. It's an event ticket marketplace, and you can go to any event you can think of under the sun, under the roof of a dome, whether it's music or sports or any other kind of live event. We got you over at SeatGeek. MLB tickets, NFL tickets, we got it all. And they have a special deal scaler that tells you whether you're getting a good deal, a bad deal, or a horrendous deal. You got to go for that green, get the good deal. And we have a good deal for you for SeatGeek. To get a $20 rebate on your tickets, $20 back on those seats, you just have to download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, and click on add a promo code. You're going to enter our promo code, RSB, and your next Red Sox game, your Drake concert, whatever you want to go to. Nerlens Noel was loving that Drake concert, by the way. $20 you're going to get back after entering the promo code RSB after you made your first ticket purchase. That's SeatGeek, and this is in the news. Olympics. As always, we love to hit on the Olympics. I already did it before the show, but guess what? The next chapter of the Olympics is the green pool. So, as some of you have seen, the Olympic diving pool in Rio, and this is just number, like, 150 in the list of things that have gone wrong out in Rio since the prelude to the Olympic Games started early this summer, but now we have a good old green swimming pool. A swimming pool perfectly fine, crystal clear for people to dive into, either straight forward or on their backs, as I said earlier. It is now green, and Olympic diving practice has been canceled. This is from Lisa Dillman of the Los Angeles Times. She says, Poolgate continued for another day at the Rio Olympics. Rio officials citing FINA approval took the unusual measure of shutting down training for the divers Friday because of the continued green water at the diving pool, one of the most visible facility failures of the Olympic Games. They're attempting to get things right in time for Friday's 3-meter springboard event for the women. British star diver Tom Daley, an active and witty social media presence, commented on the development via Twitter. Diving pool was closed this morning. Hopefully that means we haven't been diving in anything too bad the last couple of days. U.S. diver Abby Johnson also took to Twitter with a message. Show up for my warm-up and without prior notice, they say the pool is closed this morning. Hashtag fix the swamp should start trending. And Rio 2016, as they've said again and again, and as has failed to come true, we confirm that diving training in Maria Link Aquatic Center pool is canceled this morning. FINA is aware and supports our decision. The reason is that the water must be still so the pool can return to its blue color as soon as possible. Athletes are performing dry training this morning in Maria Link. Diving training will resume at 1 p.m. and preliminaries at 3:30, so everything is fine, they tell us over at the Olympic diving pool. Hopefully it was just algae in that pool and not something worse like we heard about in the Bay where they're doing sailing. And I suspect once these Olympics are over, we're going to hear about something even nastier in that pool or in that lake. Take your pick. That's your latest Olympic gross update. The pool is broken, and guess what they tell us? The latest thing we heard over Twitter. Chemistry is not an exact science. I saw that on Twitter earlier and just fell back in my chair. Chemistry is not an exact science. That's what they say about this. Quote of the Rio Games. This is from the AP. From an official on the green diving pool. Chemistry is not an exact science. That's where we're at with the Olympics. That's all I'll leave you there with. On to your favorite team, the Red Sox. So much potential this year. The best run differential in the American League is still what they hold overall for the season. The best offense in baseball is still a distinction they've held, but not lately. Over the last 20 games, they've lost 13. They're -7 in run differential over that stretch. And now, finally, job questions are starting to be raised about John Farrell. Boston.com, Eric Wilbur writes, "It's good to have John Farrell around. It was a year ago this week that the Red Sox manager found himself embroiled in a far more meaningful struggle than what he could possibly expect from Pablo Sandoval any given night. Late August, Farrell discovered what he had been diagnosed with, stage 1 non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, prompting immediate treatment and a leave of absence from the Red Sox dugout." Skipping a little bit ahead, Farrell's cancer was announced to be in remission last October. 1 year on from that good news, the Sox should be celebrating his health in the postseason. But can he actually get them there? With his 2013 World Series success growing more distance by the day, it's quite possible that Farrell's health was a primary reason he wasn't fired last offseason after a second straight last place finish in favor of bench coach Tory Revullo, who's still around, by the way. He led the Celtics to a 27-20 record for his interim stint as skipper. Ever conscious of their image and fearful of public backlash, the Red Sox certainly weren't about to let go of a man who faced legacy challenge, even if he'd already proven himself subpar in his role with the team. "Maybe the time has come to move on, though," he says. Farrell's team is floundering. Following Wednesday night's disastrous 9-4 loss to the New York Yankees at Fenway Park, a game in which the Red Sox bullpen blew a 4-1 lead after six innings, Boston's 12-13 since the All-Star break. The Red Sox bats, same ones leading the American League with 5.4 runs a game, have managed to score only 3.6 over the last 2 weeks. The offense now might also have to deal with David Ortiz missing a few days after he fouled a ball off his right shin and limped off the field in the ninth inning Wednesday night. So now, middle of August, people are finally starting to question whether John Farrell's the right guy to lead this team. It wasn't everybody in the lineup having a miraculous season, whether it was Dustin Pedroia, David Ortiz having the best 40-year-old season you can imagine, before we all thought the terrible end had come when he fouled that ball off his leg. Instead, he's back in the lineup yesterday. Another loss to what I would say is the worst team in the American League since the Yankees have disloaded all their talent. So absolutely embarrassed by the Yankees at Fenway this week. One of the few Fenway series they have down the stretch of the season. This 7-13 stretch over those 20 games they've been on now have dropped them out of first place, out of the first wild card spot, and now Detroit is just a half game back of taking the Red Sox out of the playoffs entirely. All these guys in the lineup represent one of the best offenses they've ever had, so no issues there, even though they've faltered of late. The pitching has been horrendous, but it's not due to a lack of talent. Rick Porcello is a Cy Young contender this year. David Price, for all his underperformances, has had some fantastic performances too. And Stephen Wright, before his shoulder injury this week, was one of the biggest surprises on the team. Then you got Craig Kimbrel. Question him all you want. He has made the most of his save opportunities. The bullpen has shown flashes at times of being successful. They have the personnel back there. It's not an issue of personnel. So you're saying the personnel issue isn't the issue for the rotation struggles. Certainly, maybe not certainly, but not the whole reason for the bullpen struggles. And personnel is not an issue with the offense. This might be the best offense they've had since 2004. So who does it fall back on? The manager. And it feels like John Farrell could go into John Henry's office right now with Dave Dombrowski sitting by his side, drop his pants, and moon both of them tonight, and he'd still be posting that lineup card tomorrow against Arizona at home. Nothing seems to be able to touch this guy, and maybe it's because they've had their ups and downs this year. Every time it seems like they've gone off the edge, they've gone up again and gotten right back into the race, and they do hold the playoff spot right now. But I'm going to say this, if they do not make the playoffs this year, and not only that, if they do not win the division this year with the team they have, Orioles are a nice team. They're not better personnel-wise than the Red Sox. The Blue Jays are certainly not better personnel-wise than the Red Sox, especially when you compare those two offenses, the strengths of their team. So if the Red Sox keep John Farrell, do not win the division, and I'd assume they'd falter in that wild card game, just because when the going has gotten tough in close games this year, they have not come through. Not a very good close game team, and that's another testament to the manager. Making tough decisions in close games, knowing whether to take a pitcher out in the right spot, utilizing the bullpen correctly. He just put Matt Barnes in for the third game in a row. An unquestionably risky move with some of the bullpen falters they've had. Luckily, Barnes comes through, gets the three strikeouts, but that's after putting Ziegler in, who gives up three runs, and that's another personnel issue right there. Brad Ziegler has not been very good for this team, but maybe it's more about putting these guys in the right situations, knowing who's able to do best in certain situations, knowing when to take a guy out. Maybe not shuffling up the lineup. When Jackie Bradley was hitting 300, he bumped him way up early in the season. He had a terrible game, and they reversed right back on that. The inconsistency of Farrell has been astounding. And you know what? He's not the worst manager they've had. He was a step up from Bobby Valentine. But now, in the middle of a playoff race, in David Ortiz's final season with the success he's had, especially the baseball god sent a stern warning the other day when he fouled the ball off his leg and it was almost seemingly gone for good. This success is not permanent. You don't know if these prospects are going to keep growing past this year and keep getting better and better. You don't know what kind of pitching staff you're going to have next year. It could be worse. Guys could get hurt next year. Other teams could improve. You do not wait to contend in sports. If you have a contending team right in front of you right now, you take hold of that and you ride it as far as you can, especially in baseball, where in the postseason anything can happen if you're locked to get into a series with that divisional win. Red Sox are just about three games out of first place right now. Not much room for error up the stretch of the season. Fire Farrell today and take your best shot. Because the best argument that could be made for this is that he's not Dave Dombrowski's guy. John Farrell was a hire by Ben Sherrington and Larry Rucchino, who are now out of the picture. So it's only a matter of time before he's gone anyway. Why not do it now with this team that's on the field? I think that's a good way to end this show. I was going to hit on the iPhone 7, which is going to disappoint again. I'm sorry. I read this article hyping it up. It's not going to be good. Another thing that's not going to be good this summer, Seth Rogen's sausage party. Absolutely ridiculous. And I know that Seth Rogen's brand of comedy, just absolutely ridiculous, lewd, doesn't make any sense. It's just so left field that it just has you laughing. You remember his North Korea movie. He was on Travis Scott's radio show on Beats 1, which is premiering now. And thanks, Travis Scott, by the way, for hyping us up for the album today. It didn't come for any of you a surprise. And Frank Ocean, I defended Frank Ocean last episode. You can go hear what I have to say about Frank Ocean. I hate to say it, but take your time, Frank. This album has to be good to follow up Channel Orange. And you know what has to get better every week? The Bobcast. We want to hear what you think about this show. We want you to spread it around. Get back to us with your feedback on how the show's been so far. Thank you to Jay King for wrapping up our 10th anniversary episode with a bang. Some fantastic Celtics talk with him today. And guess who we have next week in our final episode before we go to Syracuse? A Syracuse legend in his own right, Damon Amendolara. Former 98.5 radio host here in the Boston area, now one of the big shots up at CBS Radio in New York City. DA of the DA Show is going to be with us next week. You cannot miss that episode. He is just such a great personality, such a great speaker, and a fantastic guy to have on this program before we head off to Syracuse like he did so many years ago. Thank you for supporting us, but we're going to be taking a one-week break once we arrive at Syracuse just to refocus, rebrand the show, think of how it can get better. Anyways, please tune in for next week's show with DA. Thank you to Jay King for being with us again. You can follow me at Real Bob Manning on Twitter. And if you want to watch the Jay King Bobby Manning Showdown, it is under the bonus level content of this episode. You can check it out there, where it's going to be exclusively held for a short time before I release it to the world. I'm Bobby Manning. This has been the Bobcast, a weekly tour of sports pop culture. Peace!